This is Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT Knoxville, 6 minutes past 1 o'clock, and I'm your host, Matt Schaefer-Powell. Bill Lyons has his fingerprints all over downtown Knoxville. Maybe not literally, but when it comes to development, Lyons is located squarely in the center of every discussion about what happens to our city and why. Today on Dialogue, we'll have the opportunity to learn how development decisions are made at City Hall. We'll talk about where we've been and where we're going as a city. And Bill Lyons will be here to guide us. If you have questions or comments, we'll open up the phone lines in a little bit. And you can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and there's a little question box on our website, WUOT.org. You can find it in the upper right-hand corner. So, Bill Lyons, thank you so much for joining us today on Dialogue.
Great to be here, Matt. It's been a while. I used to be on this quite often, especially with your predecessor,
Norris Dreyer. Yeah.
And just great to be back.
Well, good. You grew up on the other side of the state, in Memphis.
That's correct.
How in the world did you end up in Knoxville?
Well, I ended up in graduate school in Oklahoma, and then my first job as I was a professor of political science at Oklahoma State. Saw a job offer at the University of Tennessee, and I always loved the mountains, and I liked Oklahoma fine, but that was an opportunity to get closer and get to an environment that I enjoyed, and took that opportunity to end up here just by the luck of a job being available at UT. And that was in 1975, and I've been here ever since, seen a lot of changes.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. I'm curious, though, as you were growing up in Memphis, if Knoxville had any particular stigma for people on that side of the state, if you had any impressions as a boy growing up about what Knoxville is.
Knoxville was considered another world. I mean, people did associate it with where you would come for the mountains and in the outdoors and for UT and football. There was definitely that. But otherwise, I would say when I was in Oklahoma and folks said, oh, you're going home, I said, really? It's not much closer from Memphis to Knoxville than to Oklahoma. And the culture was very different between Memphis and Knoxville. Probably, you know, was a great experience to always enjoy going to different places and getting into different political cultures. And, you know, East Tennessee was always the bastion of Republicanism. And when I grew up, there were no Republicans in Memphis. The only ones they had were called post office Republicans, which were folks who would get on the ballot kind of in a sacrificial way in hope if a Republican won, they'd get appointed to a patronage job like the post office. And political scientists had a term for that. And that's what that was.
Oh, that's funny.
A lot of changes since then.
1974. So what, when you look back on what the city, in particular the city center, the downtown area, was like in 1974. How would you describe that?
When I came to Knoxville, my very early impressions were that the air here was horrible. I noticed the coal in the air. There was the steam plant both here and on Lakeshore by North Shore was pumping very visible smoke into the air that had not been treated in any way, shape, or form. And that was one of my first takeaways. And also, I thought that there were an awful lot of people who were pretty free where they were there dispensing litter and trash. Those are my first takeaways. And downtown was an interesting place to go, but it wasn't anywhere I thought that much about. The UT was more the center of my universe at that time. But I've always been interested in cities and how they develop. And one of my areas was urban politics. So I always followed the politics in Knoxville, fascinated with the lore of Kaz Walker, et cetera.
Sure.
And it was always engaged in the academic world. Not everybody gets engaged in the local political scene, but by nature, I've always been attracted to that as well as national politics.
So you had this nice tenured position at the University of Tennessee, teaching political science.
Correct.
And what made you leave that behind and go into the tussling of city politics?
Well, academics, as you know, can be a little tussling, if in a different way. About 30 years in, 29 or 30 years in of, you know, the publishing and the teaching and the public service, I actually was drawn into being more actively engaged when I was appointed to the KCDC board, Knoxville Community Development Corporation, and then became chair of that board, and shortly thereafter, the development of Market Square was given to us after it failing a few times in various other settings. So then as chair, I took a more active than usual role in trying to guide that, especially to apply a lot of the principles I was convinced needed to be applied here, which were much more open public process, participation, getting away from top-down decisions that were constantly being shut down by people using new technologies such as the talk radio or the internet and those kinds. There was something called K2K, which was the precursor of various blogs now. And that sort of drew me in. And another person on that board, as we processed that, was Bill Haslam. Got to know him, was involved in his campaign for mayor against Madeline Rojero. Though it was a hard-fought race, and I totally respected the way she competed in that race, and also of, maybe I'm biased, but of all the campaigns we've ever had, the level of dialogue about issues, about, we talked about growth, smart growth. Madeline brought up all kinds of terrific issues ahead of her time about environmental sustainability and others, and we just had a very good and very respectful campaign. And then I decided maybe I would take leave, and I did take leave to come up here to, or come up to City Hall to work with Mayor Haslam. Thought I'd go back to UT in a couple years, but decided I'll just stick it out. And then I officially severed my ties with UT after their generous gift of 8 years of leave. And came on and with Madeline to be deputy to the mayor when she was elected, and have enjoyed being with her and a great team ever since.
You know, it's you mentioned that particular election, and I had both Madeline and Bill Haslam on this very show for a live forum and debate, and it was one of the most there was mutual respect. There was not any kind of backstabbing or trying to advance your opinion at the expense of someone else's. And the only problem with that particular show is after the second break, they both went up to use the restroom, and I think they got caught in a conversation in the hall. I didn't know if they were going to come back, but anyway.
And as you know, of course, Mayor Haslam brought in now Mayor Rojero to be the director of community development, and that was a great transition and a great statement to the community of sort of the bias of working together, compromise and cooperation over conflict, which I think has held since that time.
Well, and also when Bill Haslam was leaving Knoxville to become the governor of Tennessee, there was a lot of speculation about what might happen with you. What made you hang on? What made you say, I'm gonna stay where I am?
Well, we had a year where Daniel Brown was mayor. Council chose Daniel Brown from the 6th District, and Mayor Brown was great to work with. Larry Martin and I decided we would stay that year and work with him during that transition. And then we both took an active role. We both knew Madeline very well as community development director, and she did a phenomenal job in taking a difficult situation in that department, and I observed that firsthand, and created a lot of esprit de corps and camaraderie and a lot of accomplishments. So we both supported her in her seeking being mayor, and I decided to stay on, and Larry went over and joined Governor Haslam.
And I mean, can you foresee the next mayor? Because at some point she's going to she's going to be term limited. Can you see staying on if the opportunity is there for the next administration?
Well, I'm sort of looking to get through this term. I'll be not so sprightly 71 at that point. You know, I've seen all kinds of folks I know who have retired. I'm not much interested in doing that in any immediate sense, but that's out there. But I'm one of those people who wouldn't quite know what to do upon retirement. So.
Yeah,
one never knows, but I'm sort of counting on winding this on out at the end of this term right now.
Now, as someone so involved with the city, what about Knoxville excites you the most?
I think there is just a sense of momentum that's been here and continues. And once we got over a sense that we could not accomplish anything, and that's where getting involved during that whole Market Square and downtown development stage, it was, people were saying we had Asheville envy, Chattanooga envy, maybe a little Greenville envy, Lexington envy, but mostly Chattanooga envy. Why can't we get our act together? And there was a sense that we could not make public decisions. We couldn't agree. We couldn't get to the we couldn't get a strategy for downtown. We couldn't get the public investment goals and then work with the private sector to see how that was all going to work.
And there's certainly precedent for that when you think about the aquarium project. The Justice Center project, a lot of these projects that kind of went through various machinations and then went nowhere.
Well, we had the Justice Center, and there were the squabbles over it, and it's not taking place, which I think in retrospect was a good thing by all means. And you had the planetarium, you had various...
Planetarium, yeah, I think sorry. I said aquarium, but right. Yeah, planetarium.
And right. You had various other tries, all, you know, people wanted to do something, and there was this narrative about, let's do anything even if it's wrong, and I always rebel against, no, let's not do anything wrong. These wrong decisions sometimes have lifespans of decades. You know, let's take our time, be more organic, recognize who we are as a community, not try to be something we're not, and then work with property owners and, you know, get away, think a little piece by piece and with a goal and a strategy and a plan, and then bring everybody in, discuss it, vet it, have the disagreements. There was a lot of mistrust. Now, to get back to your question that we've been on a minute. So what I like about Knoxville now is there is a healthy skepticism. You always want that about just about everything you do. But there's now a sense that we as a community can do things, can accomplish things, and we can resolve conflicts, and we can make public decisions, and we can follow through. And I think that's a tremendous, I know that's a tremendous jump from where we were.
Well, and when I moved here 14 years ago in 2002. And one of the things that I noticed when I moved here was that Knoxvillians were almost apologetic about their city. I may say, this is a cool city. And they go, yeah, but it's not Chattanooga.
Right.
Yeah, but it's this. Yeah, but. And I have to tell you, 14 years later, I just don't hear that anymore.
Right. I think there is real value in having a community confidence and a sense of pride. It isn't just within the city limits. It's regional. It's certain throughout the county. People are proud now of our downtown and of what we're becoming and all the things that are happening in the center city. And you see, one of the things I do since my leftover social science days, I'll often walk through the garages and see cars, license plates, and see where folks are coming from. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing what a regional draw we have become. And just seeing people enjoy being in our city core, which is, you know, what my concentration has been upon, and expanding, growing from the inside out and working on the core rather than picking in green fields and annexing. We have a total different approach. And I was at a meeting today where Mayor O'Hara articulated that very clearly and people were nodding. That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Do you still find people from time to time comparing Knoxville unfavorably to other cities?
Yes.
Hey, so-and-so has this. These have.
Some people, and this is just part of human nature, I think, feel comfortable in a narrative. Now we have this or that, or we. Why can't we be like another city who has a few things we don't have? But you hear very much less of that than we did. But I think there's that a little tension with that out there is always good. You know, so we can learn from other places, and we talk with people in Chattanooga and Nashville and other cities about what they're doing and have a great positive relationship with them. And they come up and look at some things we're doing oftentimes as well. So I think it's good to have people looking longingly sometimes other places, but at least now they're doing it saying, you know, most of the time, well, we've made a lot of progress. We're doing well. This city does X.
Yeah, right.
And that's
fine.
Are
there any specific cities? You mentioned Chattanooga and Nashville. Are there cities that we kind of emulate as we look to see what we're going to do?
You know, a city that we do look toward a lot is Greenville, South Carolina. They have a very good mayor of who has come here a few times, Knox White, a really fine leader there. And they went through and developed their downtown and used a lot of the principles that we use. They were a little ahead of us, but Greenville has been a nice model. And many things about Chattanooga are attractive as well. But we are open to looking. Anytime we take on any challenge or any plan, the first thing we do, let's look at what other cities are doing, and let's always learn from other cities. There are we've invented a few wheels, but we don't need to reinvent all of them.
When you go on vacation, do you turn that switch off, or are you constantly looking around at other cities and saying, ooh, that's interesting?
Much of the latter. I smiled when you asked that. I'm incapable of going anywhere without looking at parking meters, signs, garages, rates, and oftentimes putting that sort of thing on Facebook or taking notes upon it. You just can't really get away from it. And it's enjoyable because each city has a little different twist usually in the way they do things.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here on Dialogue. Our guest today is Bill Lyons, one of the primary players in Knoxville's development. If you want to participate in the conversation, you can do it a number of ways. You can tweet us at WUOTFM, send us a Facebook message, or fill out the handy little box on our homepage. And as always, you can call us at 974-5050. That's 974-5050. And this is Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT. This is Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT. I'm Matt Schaefer-Powell, and joined today by Bill Lyons, deputy to the mayor of Knoxville and a major force in how the city develops. If you have a question or comment, you can catch us on Twitter or on Facebook. And if you go to our webpage, there's a neat little question box you can fill out in the upper right-hand corner, and we will do our best to get your question to our guest, Bill Lyons. And of course, you can always just call us. The number is 974-5050. That's 974-5050. So, Bill, you've been here since 1974. You've been at City Hall since, would it be 2003?
December 2003.
Mm-hmm. What have been some of your biggest challenges over that time in terms of following a specific vision?
I think communicating the vision, forming the vision with the help of lots of very, very informed and educated and intelligent local citizens around are growing from the inside out, and then communicating that vision and having people understand it, and then putting the tools in place to help bring along and to work with using the culmination of that vision into action. And that deals with what process we use, working with private investors, when city public investment is, getting those to work, and making sure we got the requisite support in the first in the public, then in the media, and on our legislative body, City Council. It's critical with our team getting things implemented. I think there are lots of ideas, and I think we have plenty of good ones, and we've learned a lot from other people with maybe even better ones. But implementing them, getting ideas which can be implemented, and then bringing them through to fruition is really the challenge.
It seems like communication then is really a big part of the whole process, being able to explain very carefully what it is you're after.
Yes, I am totally committed to communicating in all possible manner of communication. I was listening to you talking about Facebook and Twitter and your website. I've been very proactive myself, and others with whom I work have been, on social media, on blogs, where you have a chance to explain to what I call the attentive public. In many cases, they are folks in the media, they're elected officials, that are other interested people, about what we're doing and why, answering questions, overcoming some biases, some healthy skepticism, sometimes some not so healthy skepticism, but it all comes at, you know, it's all part of the great equation. And we're a believer in, Mayor Rojero is, we have a terrific communications department. Jesse Mayshore Shark and Eric Vreeland are constantly at work with us on getting the word out and being ahead of the curve rather than behind the curve, explaining what we're doing and making sure there's plenty, not only a public notice, but using the appropriate mode of public participation. It's not all the same. It's not one size fits all, but getting people involved in virtually everything that we do. We had a great parking summit to where we talked all about big changes we were making in parking. We had things on social media. We had blog posts. We worked proactively with the more traditional media, TV and newspaper, and make sure that the logic of what we were doing and why and when and how was all made very clear. And that just has made everything work so much better. It's worth all the investment on the front end when one does that.
Is it easier to make that case now than it would have been, say, 10 years ago, simply because people can walk downtown and say, oh, okay, this is where we've been, where we're going?
I think it is easier. We have a lot more of the public who is quite engaged through any number of mechanisms. I think we're all kept on our toes a lot more. There are lots of ways for people to reach us. We're all reachable about 24/7. I may get a text from the mayor, who's very engaged and attentive to to everything that's going on, which is a terrific asset. I will, you know, at 10 o'clock at night, it's something somebody has sent her on Facebook that's worth looking into. Or we may find out on social media that there's a crane blocking a business on Gay Street. And how in the world did that happen? And people are infuriated. But we find those things out, and then we immediately can address them. Now, my living downtown helps that.
You can see it firsthand, yeah.
I can get right in the middle of it. And I think these new technologies, if you harness them, can really be very helpful, but they also give lots of people lots of ways to reach you, criticize, communicate, and it's a lot of work, but I think it's very well worth it.
You know, one of the things that is certainly not exclusive to the city of Knoxville, you will often hear when people are talking about public interaction with their local government, sometimes their state or national government too, that the city is just going through the motions. What I'm saying isn't really going to change their mind one way or the other.
Right.
I'm sure you've heard that criticism before, and how do you respond to that?
Well, it's understandable, and people feel that lack of efficacy in a lot of areas in their life, that they may speak and nobody's listening, but we're not going through the motions for one very good reason, or two very good reasons. Number one, it's not the right thing to do. We represent people who elect our mayor, who appoint us to make public policy, and we need to be responsive. And secondly, even if we somehow didn't feel like we ought to do that, that it's pragmatic. It's the right thing to do. Your life goes a lot better when you listen. When I was involved in the development, what's called Downtown North, we assembled going from downtown out central and Broadway in that corridor. We assembled a number of people in a group, very intelligent people, and a lot of the best ideas from that came from that group. But you can always learn from others. None of us have a monopoly, and we really see it in our interest to be flexible when we went into regulating food trucks. We had meeting after meeting with stakeholders, with the general public, with brick-and-mortar restaurants, came back. I think that process worked out very, very well. We have our Patricia Robledo, who's our small business coordinator, worked very closely during that whole process. And that would never have worked had we not listened and been flexible, and had we just tried to come in and impose something from the top down. As you can tell, I'm really very much not in favor of top-down management, and there is a place for leadership in the bully pulpit, but there's most of the decisions are made more interactively by engaging people along the way on most things.
When you're planning the development of a city, how do you find the balance between new construction and the renovation of older buildings?
Well,
where's that line?
In our sense, they complement each other very well, because we're very much not interested in an older building coming down and for a new building to go up if we can possibly help it. Our top priority has been saving our historic structures, and those have tremendous appeal. And they give downtown part of its real sense of uniqueness of what our city is. If you go down the 400-500 block of Gay Street or into Market Square, so we try to preserve and put everything into use that's possible. Now we also don't like flat parking lots. And whenever a parking lot turns into something like Marble Alley as new construction, or now the parking lot down there on Depot is going to turn into Regus Square, that is a great positive all the way around. So there is a place for new construction. We hope not at the expense of taking a building down. And sometimes buildings that come down are way beyond any utility. So it's not that every single structure is going to stay, but I would say it's safe to say we have a bias on the front end to trying to save and utilize the structure if at all possible. And that gives a real heart to the redevelopment of the city.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, there are some times when you have to say that building just has to go.
Right. Yeah, some buildings do. And some have less character than others and make less of a contribution than others. But again, I would say we go in with a bias toward utilizing a building rather than have it come down, and a definite bias toward having a parking lot turn into a structure.
974-5500, 974-5500 is the number for you to call if you have a question or comment for Bill Lyons. Bill Lyons is deputy to Mayor Madeline Rojero and also the public policy officer officer for the city of Knoxville, very involved in the changes that you've seen in Knoxville over the last decade or so. So please give us a call, 974-5500. You can also go to our Twitter account, at WUOTFM. You can ask a question on Facebook, and you can ask a question on our website. There's a handy little box here. And in fact, one of those questions, how far can downtown development go before it hits its limits? How many apartments and businesses can be supported? Is there an end in sight? Is there a ceiling where we have to stop creating these spaces?
I would say, in my mind, the answer is basically no, there's not a limit. We are expanding geographically right now. I mean, and I mentioned Riga Square down on Depot. We're heading to the north and we're heading to the east. We have a redevelopment area along Magnolia that we're very excited about. And we want to make sure this redevelopment works well with what suits the neighborhood and the area and the residents who are there. So it's not, again, not a one size fits all the time, but there's strategic investment there. The tools we use, and that might sort of be a and undergirding that question, sometimes involve putting off receiving the full taxation of a property in order to make that project viable and feasible. We use something called tax increment financing. Mm-hmm. We also use payment in lieu of taxing as a tool. Those have all returned tremendous immediate additional taxes to the community to spend for services all over in the city and in the county, because the county property taxes are affected as well. And it's not like we have a limited pool of funds that are being drained to support downtown. It's quite the contrary. The development of downtown has created millions of dollars of new public funds as it's taken place, because it's the most efficient way to develop. Their infrastructure's here, very little new cost in providing any of that, the streets, the roads, the stormwater, and that when you put that kind of density that we're talking about, take the Holston, for example, that property was appraised at $800,000 or $900,000 before it was developed, and it's appraised well over $20 million post development. That's all produces new income, new jobs, new opportunities, and really it's a win-win for everybody.
But you do get pushback on TIFs from time to time.
Certainly, I spent a lot of time more recently at County Commission explaining the entire process with them, and we made some alterations in that process after hearing some of their concerns. Council always keeps us on our toes. We use two tests with those, what we call the but-for test. That is, could this project happen but for using this tax increment to support its development? And the second part is this really a project worthy of our engagement? What is the general public interest in our participation in the project? And certainly at the top of the list is preserving an historic structure filling in some of these gaps where we have very little in the old industrial part of the city. We do get pushback. We're very active to engage that, and we try to stay out in front of that. And we also are totally transparent and are committed to being totally transparent. Our web pages, if you go to the city of Knoxville, go to the redevelopment department, we have every project. It's pre-tax value, it's post-tax, what the entire project, all the projects together are producing an income. And you can see what those projects are and were and when they're subject to be intended to mm-hmm. be completed.
Well, some of the folks who are opposed to tax increment financing will bring up, and something that you alluded to just a second ago, is that with this growth also comes city services
right.
that are going to have to come be paid for from somewhere.
Right.
And the argument there is that they're coming out of taxpayers' pockets, things like street maintenance, things like sewer.
Right. Well, I think my response to that, and we hear those sorts of concerns, is the streets are already being swept and maintained. The one increment in service demand that's definitely there is we're picking up more garbage. That's a challenge, than from residences. The sewers are already there, but we're generating far in excess of new taxes by gigantic multiple than any increase in cost. And also, once you get a building that's whether historic or new, meeting all fire codes, fully occupied, then you have the advantage of not any drain on those very, very valuable services. And all one needs to do is look at the fate of the McClung warehouses and the millions of dollars that cost, because that project never could be, it could work, because for a variety of reasons, mostly having to do with the property owner being unable to put together a viable development plan.
I want to go back just one second for to the question that we got on our website about if there's a ceiling as far as space that we're creating in downtown. Mm-hmm. Is there though, do you have to somewhat keep in mind that there's a line where you could end up with a lot of empty office space or a lot of empty residential or retail space? How do you determine when you're getting close to that?
We rely on the cues from the market for that. That is, as long as somebody is willing to invest and a bank is willing to support that, and they're at risk for the residences, and so far that risk has been rewarded, then we're fine. The city is not in any way on the hook if those projects fail. Then we're the person who's on the hook is the developer and the bank. Now, obviously, we don't want the project to fail. That's not good in any way. We do anything we can to support it. But that's a very good question and one that we hear a lot. But we're not trying to decide, do we need more? Are we exceeding the demand for residences, or too many condos, or too many apartments, or too many office buildings? There are plenty of people who study markets, who come in and do research, who know what the demand for student housing is around, you know, or residential housing downtown, or higher end condos, or lower end, lower price point rentals. We are interested in making sure we have a supply of workforce housing around, that it's not all at the top end. That sometimes is a little bit of a challenge because of land prices and so forth. But that's probably where we enter in and try to push on that market, those market forces somewhat.
Do you ever have to tell a developer, no, that's just not going to fit into what we want to, what we want our city to be?
Well, we tell the developers no quite often. And usually, I mean, one thing that limits them are our downtown design guidelines and what they can do in our form-based code on Cumberland. So just that limits and guides what a developer can do. But when they come, and we can't control that if they meet those basic land use regulations. However, what we can control is, are we going to engage and use any of our tools? We've said no for a variety of reasons. Oftentimes, we think the project can take place without them, or it's just not, or that there are elements of it that are just not set or just not consistent with our vision, and that's something that happens not all the time, but it's happened. We've had more than a few of those. So yes, the problem is that doesn't get announced. So people sometimes, and you never say no. Well, actually, we do.
974-5500 is the number for you to call. If you have a question for Bill Lyons, he is the public policy chief for the city of Knoxville and also a deputy to Mayor Madeline Roe Harrell. We're going to go to Robert, who's calling from the road in Knoxville. Robert, welcome to Dialogue.
Hey.
Hey, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks. Question. I was involved somewhat peripherally, not as seminally as you were, with the 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness back in the day. And I have been disengaged from that for quite a while. I know that the city still has an office that is directed in that, trying to address that issue. But my curiosity was piqued by just hearing you talk and thinking, I remember how contentious some of that stuff was back then. And I wanted to find out, how are the two kind of big developments that added up to a giant bone in the throat of the community, Swinnecon Manor and Mintvilla, how are they doing now? And where are you guys going with developing housing moving forward?
Well, thank you very much for the call, Robert.
Sure.
That's Robert. Good to hear from you again. I think I know who I'm talking to here.
At times, it's a small town, isn't
that's
it?
That's right. Those projects, we feel very strongly, have been invaluable to the community. We're very glad we took them on. You're right. And as you know, they were very contentious. We only barely got those approved. There were a lot of fear associated with them and a lot of fear being stirred by people that they were going to be detriments to the community. I think it's safe to say that virtually none of those fears have been realized, that Flanagan is a beautiful facility that people around it are find to be an asset and using the public meeting space and others, and looks great and is kept up great and is most importantly helping people who are vulnerable and who do need the help. We never want to forget about the needs that people have. have for permanent supportive housing with the services that go with that. And the same thing for the old Fifth Avenue Motel, now Menvilla Manor. Had that become just a flat parking lot, it would be right now, I'm sure, strewn with trash and very unattractive. That's very, again, positive for the people who live there and certainly positive for the community. So I've always happy and sort of we bemoan sometimes not the lack of follow through that sometimes comes through about, God, everybody thought that was those projects were going to be the end of the world and they were going to be horrible and disruptive to folks. And that just did not turn out to be true. We're now doing all we can to work with affordable housing and to have probably smaller scale supportive housing. The one thing we did learn, it's a little more challenging when you have large numbers. You know, when you have 40 or 50, it does bring about, and it's understandable, community concerns of what that's going to be like. And so we're working on a smaller scale projects. We're also working with those using low-income tax credits. We lobbied and got some state laws changed so that works out to be a business model where developers find it in their interest to build affordable housing units, and for a while that had been challenged. And we're very committed to housing. We find once we get into the 8 million we've done over a number of years with KCDC to replace Walter P. Taylor Housing Project with a whole different level of housing through our community development partner. Those are all working very well. So housing is a key. It's a necessity that we have a amount of affordable housing for folks, and it's a challenge in every city in the country, and we're no exception.
Yeah, we're going to take a break in just a moment, but I wanted to ask you about this. That the new development going in at the former Regus space introduces... For me, it seems like it might be an interesting dilemma from a development standpoint. That is, the area directly north of that is considered a center of services for the homeless, and that area is heavily populated with homeless people. Is there a concern that this could conflict with expansion or development in that area?
I've long been a believer, and I think the facts somewhat bear this out, if not very much bear this out, that by putting more folks and more development in an area, that any of the things that people associate negatively with having people, say, on the street, prostitution, other things that one sees, tend to improve greatly. It's, you know, having the homeless service providers are there. You know, CARM is there a little north of that. But people, there are a lot of people who are more than willing to live in proximity to those and understand the role that they play and are perfectly comfortable with having, a variety of people along the street. But we certainly never want to be comfortable with some of the, you know, the negative aspects of people not having a place to stay. That does, you know, create some challenges for the environment, and we're well aware of and have to deal with those. But it's been amazing how people are more than willing to live in areas closer to some of the service providers than some would have thought.
We're going to take a quick break here on Dialogue. Our guest today is Bill Lyons, one of the primary players in Knoxville's development. If you want to participate in the conversation, you can tweet us at WUOTFM, send us a Facebook message. You can fill out that little box on our homepage. And as always, you can call us at 974-5050. It's 974-5050. And this is Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT. This is Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT. I'm Matt Schaefer-Powell, and I'm joined today by Bill Lyons, deputy to the mayor of Knoxville and a major force in how this city develops. If you have questions or comments, you can catch us on Twitter or Facebook. And if you go to our webpage, there's a question box you can fill out there, and we'll do our best to get your question to Bill Lyons. And, of course, you can just call us, 974-5050. We plan to take a couple of calls in just a moment. I also want to turn to one of the questions coming through on our website. Has the city ever considered traffic calming measures for Henley Street? This would create a more friendly space between UT and downtown.
We have looked at Henley Street quite a bit, and we're doing some, I would say, minor traffic calming by filling in some of the medians around Henley and Church. And then that's been one element. We heard from Urban Land Institute that that was a concern. Obviously, it's a wide street to cross. We've decided to also make the pedestrian connection between the core of downtown and World's Fair Park and UT more pleasant by improving the bridge. I mean, I don't know if y'all seen the new colors and the improved bridge that goes over toward the convention center. You know, my colleague, Deputy Christy Branscom, did a tremendous job helping pull that through and implement that, and also of relining Clinch so it's got more pedestrian friendly with plantings and so forth. So the connection between UT and downtown is critical. Henley is a barrier. We're doing what we can, but it holds a tremendous amount of traffic, and it's and in a lot of ways it calms itself most of the day because, you know, there's so much traffic on it. Now there are concerns when traffic roars off the interstate and heads and right up to Clinch where the Holiday Inn is. You know, sometimes it goes quite quickly and it's a pedestrian challenge. So, you know, we're aware of that. So that's on something we look at, but that's one that there are no, we've done all the doable immediate engineering things we can do. And the other is it's kind of kept in mind as things develop from now on.
974-5500, 974-5500 is the number to call if you have a question, like Susan, who's calling from Knoxville. Susan, welcome to Dialogue. Hello, Susan, you are on the air. And I will push this button. Poor Susan.
Okay.
Susan, now I apologize. You weren't on the air, but you are now. Welcome to Dialogue.
Oh, well, hey there.
You can blame that on human error.
Well, Knoxville, of course, has bloomed under Bill's tutelage and so forth over the years. But I'm interested in a couple of things. One is, approaching seniordom, what kind of flat bicycling is going to be available long-term, 1-3-5-year plan, around the city other than Volunteer Landing? Like Third Creek, or some of the trails just have too many hills if you can't handle that. So what's coming? And then that's part one. And the second is Legacy Parks, will they be coming through Knoxville at all? And will they have any flat bicycle spaces for seniors?
Well, I can say we are pursuing, and Legacy Parks is taking the lead, an initiative on bicycles and pursuing being able to get on a bicycle one place and ride it and leave it another. You'll see that in many cities. We're just at the beginning stages of talking about that among the stakeholders. As for flat bicycling, all I say, the geography constrains a lot of that. Obviously, we're not going to be flattening any hills, but there are places and routes one can do. We have a John Livengood in our engineering department is a full-time bicycle person, and every street we do and every place that we develop, we look toward what we can do to enable bicycling. Once being able to bicycle over the Gay Street Bridge, and as new housing goes north of that, where Regal is going to be, south of that, all the way through downtown is much flatter, and there are ways to get over without going through the Cumberland Gulch that are flatter. So we're always looking to provide better bicycle opportunities in everything that we do. But I would be stretching it to say that we had a great solution to allow seniors a whole lot of room for bicycling on flat areas just because of the geography. We're committed to bicycling as an option, though, whenever possible.
Does the geography of geography and geology, I suppose you could say, of Knoxville limit us? I mean, do you find it being a limiting factor very often?
It's a limiting factor, but that's one of those glass half full deals. You know, I think it provides way more opportunities than it does limits, and it allows us to do things like have the development of one of the Mayor O'Hara's top priorities, the urban wilderness, provides just tremendous opportunities for us to be an outdoor destination. And most people prefer hills to flatland when you're talking about outdoor destinations. But it does create problems, especially for bicycling. I grew up in a city with a grid where you could bicycle all over the place and find 1,000 different ways to get somewhere. And now you're pretty constrained by a lot of your major arteries if you're coming from the west. Now, we do have a great greenway system, and we're constantly working on that. But that's, you know, when you're using the arteries, it's bicycling is a little more difficult in Knoxville than some others. And the geography does cause a lot of the traffic to funnel itself along those arteries without sometimes the alternative routes that other cities might have.
Dante called and actually left a message on our website and wanted to know if the streetlights are currently LED in Knoxville, and if not, is that in the plans?
The streetlights are LED. That was one of our initiatives, our sustainability department, which is, again, a great priority. That's a tremendously successful enterprise. Those lights being changed over have a street. I'm talking about traffic lights, not street lights. Let me make sure that's clear. Streetlights are not now LED. That we have a couple pilot projects, but that is something on our horizon. But the traffic lights are LED, and they work very well, and that's definitely the route cities are going, and we're looking to expand that greatly and hopefully sooner rather than later.
If you were to, of course, I'm asking you to look into a crystal ball to a certain extent, but if you were to look at Knoxville in 10 or 20 years, what do you think it's going to look like? What is it going to feel like?
I think in many ways, you know, it's going to be a city of strong neighborhoods as it is now, and hopefully those neighborhoods will look a lot like they are now with the housing stock healthy and people investing. I think once you get into the core, I'd like to think that that industrial heart of the city that's still massively underdeveloped will be continue to be developed in a nice, sustainable way that provides lots of retail opportunities and housing opportunities. And we have a lot of opportunity for density in places where the neighbors like density, which again is in the city core. What I see is Cumberland will be, of course, done here within a year. Mm-hmm. The development is occurring. It, downtown, the downtown north, the south waterfront, I see looking just tremendous. And that's already starting to occur, and people begin to see that with the Riverwalk and everything else. So I see us with a very lively core of our city and very healthy neighborhoods. And then you'll see Lakeshore Park fully developed, and people love it. So we're not going to want to have a conversation without bringing the recreational space and open space into the discussion as well. I think we are going to be looking for new ways to develop. We're going to have a total study of the zoning code that Gerald Green, our MPC director, has been advocating, and we're totally in agreement with. So we're going to have to decide how we handle the land use questions and parking, whether we have mandatory parking or we think we have too much of that right now and too many parking lots that we don't necessarily need. Public transit, I think, will be expanded. That's something that is critical to the kind of city that we have a vision that we're talking about our vision of.
Is gentrification a concern as we move forward, especially as we continue to move out of what's traditionally considered the city center?
Yeah. You always want to be very conscious of the effect of development on those who live in an area, and certainly not ever have it be seen as counter to their interest. Up to this point, we've been very fortunate in that wherever we've built, nobody's lived. Nobody has been pushed out. I mean, we're talking about downtown having virtually no residents. As we go into head east, we're in you know, Regus Square and others, JFG building. We're talking about converting factories and industrial space. But it is a concern that you, as you develop, you create the kind of housing that inevitably is going to be at a price point that may be in conflict with those who live there, especially if the housing has, you know, reached its lowest, you know, ebb of a structure being older and the rentals going down. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to be tolerant of blight as a condition just to keep rents low. We want to make sure that there's quality housing, and that is a very, very tough challenge. And our mayor is very conscious of that, and when we have conversations with the neighborhood, especially as we head down the Magnolia Corridor, that's at the top of the list of what we're concerned about and but we're enthusiastic about the opportunity to head in that direction and provide the economic opportunity for people as well.
Going forward, what do you think is the worst thing that Knoxville could do as a city in terms of its development?
That is a very interesting question. I think we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. In many ways, Nashville is pushing getting ahead of itself. It's had tremendous development downtown. They have real transportation challenges right now. We want to make sure that we keep a viable public transportation system. As more and poor people become in a closer congested area, then you have automobile-oriented concerns that can really be difficult, you know, both in traffic and parking and everything else. So we want to make sure we keep the city livable and keep it working for citizens who are here. But we don't want to limit our vision either. I think it's pushing that envelope, but not pushing beyond what we're capable of providing services to support. And cities oftentimes confront that. Many times they have the rentals get spiraled too high, mm-hmm. on not enough people can live in an area who would like to live there. Many times the transportation networks can't keep up with it, and you have a lot of gridlock and a lot of very unpleasant situations.
What do you think have to be the biggest priorities for Knoxville in, say, 5 years?
I'd say, you know, in 5 years, we would like to keep our momentum going, finish off a lot of very important projects that we have.
Like you said, like Cumberland.
Cumberland and South Waterfront, mm-hmm. and others, and then be able to continue to form an ongoing vision for the city. We, you know, our council is very interested in that. We're very, very fortunate with the council that we have. And we, I think people understand the vision that Mayor O'Hara has of inside out and disinvestment to investment and all these concepts that are working very well, and we want to. But as that occurs, everything morphs and changes, and you have new challenges. Like, for instance, as we go out some of the corridors, now we have a challenge that it's a little hard to find parking around some of the newer retail establishments that don't have the flat parking lots, and that's great. We want people to be able to walk and bike to stores, but you also want to make sure that you don't have too much spillover into neighborhoods or somebody parking in somebody else's parking lot. And that's sort of a high class problem, but you know, it just shows that one thing brings something else along.
Last question I have you ever experienced a moment when you were maybe walking downtown and you looked around and said, wow, we're really doing something here. We're really turning this around.
I feel that every day. I walk to work, walk home, walk around after work, look, see people enjoying themselves, sitting out on patios. I feel that, but the most thing I feel is this is an atmosphere that people enjoy. It's the core of our city. It's the cultural, the social hub. And to see the folks out there overrides the sense of accomplishment of seeing the structures and the building and the economics of it. And seeing us as a functional community that feels good about itself is the most rewarding thing I've been engaged in.
We are out of time here on Dialogue. A lot of questions we were unable to get to, and we apologize for that. I want to thank Bill Lyons for spending some time with us today. Thank you, Bill.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.
Thanks also to Greg Hill, who ran the board and handled the phones today. Thank you for Brandon Hollingsworth for keeping an eye on social media. And thank you for listening and calling and sending your questions. If you missed the show or you just want to hear it again, we should have it up on our webpage in the next hour or so. Just go to WUOT.org. Dialogue is a production of 91.9 FM WUOT Knoxville, WUOT HD1 Knoxville, and WUOT.org, a listener-supported service of the University of Tennessee.